This is the Adam Gold Show.
It's the Adam Gold Show. I am Adam Gold. Dennis Cox on the ones and twos. And threes and fours and fives. Duke had five players drafted. Wendell Moore, the 26th pick, ends up with Minnesota. He was drafted by, Houston. Why the NBA just doesn't allow teams to just, hey, we made this trade, but everything has to get announced afterwards. It's bananas, but whatever it is. Nana the Scribe, Kanata Edwards from CBSSports.com joins us on the Adam Gold Show. Because my question is, did the Hornets do a good last night? Let's work from the end back. Overall, did they do well?
Overall, they did okay. I can't say a good or a bad. It's chaotically neutral. That's where I'm at with this one today. It's a chaotic neutral. It really does depend on what you feel, how you feel about it. Honestly, the Bryce McGowan's pick, great pickup. Great pickup, especially at 40, especially considering you may be losing Cody Martin to restrictive free agency this summer. It's a great pick. And then the Mark Williams pick, I get it. And me and you have talked about this before. I hope he can defend at an NBA level. I hope that he can move his feet at a decent enough. His measurables are good enough to overcome some lateral quickness issues. Mm-hmm. The Jalen Duren stuff is where you're going. Like, if you have a problem with the draft and how they drafted last night, the Jalen Duren pick is, or the Jalen Duren trade and how clunky it was, that is going to be where, if you have a problem with what they did, it's there. And I can't necessarily say, hey, you're overreacting. You effectively traded a late first round pick, a late lottery pick,
right,
for a pick in the 20s and three other second rounders. That is kind of inherently problematic because you are getting lesser value. Now, if you're going to get the guys that you want, cool. And at the same time, Mitch Kupchak has made his money and made a lot of again, the reason that there was a second first round pick was because of Mitch Kupchak's ability to draft in the second round with Devontae Graham, which eventually became a first round pick. The problem is, it just was so clunky. It just felt like same old Michael Jordan Hornets that it kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
All right, Kanata Edwards is joining us at Nada the Scribe on Twitter. A chaotically neutral,
very chaotic.
Yeah, it's a great way to describe it. Because first of all, when this deal was made, like, I remember, you know, just following it online, the Knicks had made a trade a couple of picks ahead of time. Number 11, they drafted somebody, then traded him to Oklahoma City. They didn't even announce what the Knicks got back. It took like 2 hours to figure out what the Knicks got in return. I don't even know what sounded like three first round picks. Don't care. But to me, if the Hornets were going to do something, and this is where they lose me, is that if you wanted to trade one of those picks, shouldn't you have attached it to Gordon Hayward to clear that salary off the books so you don't lose a Cody Martin to restricted free agency?
And that's the fair question. But I also kind of have to wonder what the appetite is to lose a Gordon Hayward in that building. We know that's one of the owner's favorite players. The man made an offer sheet to him 6 years ago, even though it was probably not likely going to happen. And then when Gordon Hayward was introduced to this town, one of the big things was, hey, this is one of the owner's favorite players. The owner's always wanted this guy in Charlotte. So we have to question at some point whether or not there was a real appetite to trade Gordon Hayward. And to be quite honest, I don't necessarily blame them for not really having the appetite, especially if it probably would have cost you both first rounders. Because I think that's the big thing. We've never seen someone, especially if it was going to involve Detroit, we've never seen a team not have to give up multiple first rounders to stash $30 million or something more like that. It's going to basically be the same thing if and when Russell Westbrook gets traded this year. You're going to see sweeteners like multiple first-round picks. Maybe they might even be unprotected to take on that kind of money. It's not cheap. So I completely understand why the appetite might not be there if it's going to cost you multiple first-rounders in a small, in a not necessarily a small market, but in the mid-market as well. I understand it.
All right, so you're going to have to explain this to me. Now, we're talking with Kanata Edwards at Nada the Scribe on Twitter. How are the Hornets in salary cap, you know, in a bad salary cap spot with their roster?
I don't think they're in a bad salary cap spot.
The Warriors are going to pay $7 billion to their roster. How come the Hornets can't find money to pay Cody Martin, and they're worried about keeping Miles Bridges?
I think first things first on that, and this is the thing that I've because we all saw the essentially the Clutch Sports memo liner note that made it to Shams Charania's thing about the Hornets not being worrying about paying a max to Miles Bridges. I'm not sure anybody's paying a max to Miles Bridges.
Right, I'm with you.
Honest. I'm not sure the appetite's there for 35. If it's 30 to 32, I think the Hornets will match that. I don't think anyone's willing to do that. But we also have to remember that it's only the Warriors that are not afraid of the luxury tax. That's the thing that I think we keep forgetting. It's just the Warriors that are like, okay, we're making money hand over fist in San Francisco right now, and so therefore we can pay for that. Charlotte's never going to be that team that's unafraid of the luxury tax at this point. Unfortunately, it's a mid-market, and it's not, to be quite honest, it's not good business. I do think that they're going to move something around. I'm not sure it's actually going to be Gordon Hayward. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Terry Rozier. But I think what we need to remember is that almost everybody's afraid of the luxury tax. It's not just the Charlotte Hornets.
Kanata Edwards is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. I'm not even worried about the luxury tax. I know it's not my money, but I think if you're good and you make the playoffs, I mean, the Hornets are not going to be so far into the luxury tax that it's going to be really that prohibitive either way. What does this team need to add between now and, well, I'm not going to say summer league, but between now and the start of the season?
Grown-ups. That's the answer. Grown-ups. They need adults in the room that have been there before that can teach kids how to prepare for stuff. Because if we're honest with ourselves, there were half a dozen games at least where you could see that the team was completely unprepared, unfocused, and you need those veterans around to teach you how to prepare. I would love to see PJ Tucker here. I don't think he's interested in a being the adult in the rebuild.
No.
Again, that would... He would be Roger Murtaugh for this team. Like, that's the thing. Like, a guy like P.J. Tucker would make a ton of sense for this team.
He'd be Crash Davis.
No. He's much more Roger Murtaugh. Much more. Much more Roger Murtaugh. Because he would be saying he's too old for this blank all the time. But at the same time, I really do believe that we're talking about a team that just needs a bunch of veterans, guys that know what to do, that have been in this league that can teach these kids, because they have, I believe, at least six players under 23 years old.
They're very young
on that roster.
So let me
ask
you,
incredibly young.
Let me ask you about Gordon Hayward real quick, because I advocated. Look, I said this yesterday. If I were the Hornets, I would have packaged both picks and Hayward and gone after a big man. I don't know if that would have gotten you Miles Turner, or if that's too much to get you Miles Turner. But I think somebody like that would have been, I mean, I realize he's been around a while. Maybe he's not the best option at that position. But I would have thrown everything to clear Hayward's contract off the books. But if Hayward can stay healthy, which is a huge if, are the Hornets better off just having him?
Yeah, I believe they are, because when Hayward's in there, he's one of the four or five guys that will put in the effort to stay in front of his man on defense. That's in very short supply in Charlotte right now. Maybe that changes with the coaching search, with a new coach, which also is another thing on their to-do list, on their chaotically neutral to-do list. But at the same time, we're talking about a team right now that needs multiple things. I do believe that this team is better with Gordon Hayward on it. The record shows that. But at the same time, it's a matter of availability. And right. whether that means you're limiting minutes, we're starting to load manage this guy, or even better, maybe he's coming off the bench next year, despite the optics of it. I think it's just they need him. It's you're just going to have to find a way to mitigate it so that he plays more than 40-plus games a year at this point.
All right, I want to float a theory about the head coach and Kenny Atkinson to you, Kanata, mm-hmm. before I let you go. And I know it's a bad look for Kenny Atkinson, but mm-hmm. for a guy whose career record is significantly under 500 and mm-hmm. doesn't have a name that carries any gravitas around the league, except from basketball, you know, junkies, I'll just say that, he's looking at his next gig as mm-hmm. he better win or he's not getting a third crack. And mm-hmm. maybe the Hornets, when he had time to think about it, when he realized that maybe this is not the place for me to take my second stab at this, let me wait for a better spot. Now, he should have figured that out sooner, but maybe this was basically about where the Hornets are as opposed to anything else.
I don't disagree with that, but it goes back to you knew what this was when you signed up.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the part that keeps coming. I just keep coming back to is he knew what this was. He knew that this was going to be a spot where, hey, I'm going to take some lumps while I'm trying to get these kids to figure everything out. He knew what this was. I understand if the light bulb finally clicked on, but after three interviews and then some coaching discussions and then like there's too much. It's almost like this train was so far down the road that granted he put the brakes on, he said no. And I'm kind of happy for him if he realized that, yo, I'm not the guy for this. But at the same time, it is awfully late to be figuring that out. Like he had gone through so much of this process mm-hmm. to the point where I'm not sure that he could have done this any later. He could have been now, mind you, he was short of being in Charlotte and saying, I can't do this. And then on top of that, to leak it through his agent to Woj is the, like, I think the manner in which he came with it, the manner in which he did it is probably the worst thing about this. Everything else, I think your theory does hold.
Hey, Rory McIlroy broke up with his fiance over a text.
Very true. Very true.
And he's recovered pretty nicely. Rory has recovered pretty nicely. At Not of the Scribe on Twitter, Kanata Edwards, you're the man. I appreciate your time. Have a great weekend. I'll talk to you very soon.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon, Adam.
You got it, brother. All right, Kanata Edwards. Steve King and the Rangers bringing us back. They'll be on the main stage tonight, right?
I'm sorry, who'd you say?
Steve King and the, didn't that what you said to me?
Steep King and
Steep
Rangers.
King.
Steep Canyon.
That's a strange first name.
Yeah, Steep Canyon.
Rangers. I actually thought you said Steve King in my...
No, not the author here.
Well, there are a lot of people King named Steve King.
I'm sure there are.
Never mind. Main stage tonight?
Yep.
Durham Bulls Athletic Park?
It's really cool. The stage is basically right there above second base in low center shallow center field.
So, and there are three stages. There's
yes.
one just in the outfield, shallow outfield, second base area.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are two, like, alternate stages that they will have music going on at the same time.
So, yeah, I think they're kind of staggering the main stage.
I was looking at the times. Yeah. It looks like it's a little...
Well, there's an outside one, I think, just outside the ballpark, I think, is where one of them is located.
Over the monster?
I don't think over the monster. I think it's actually the entryway, like where the fountain and stuff is.
Oh, okay,
I believe
very
is
cool.
where it is. So there's a concourse stage... And there's also where Jackie's Landing is out by
gotcha.
Right field is where a stage is also going to
Very
be set
nice.
Up. But I think they are staggering them a little bit in terms of start times and
Good.
Everything.
Should be fun.
Great time.
Go out there. What's better than refreshments And live music.
Live music, you're outdoors, and it's all North Carolina bands, which is also a great thing.
Who could find anything better? All right, when we get to this point of the show on Fridays, we open up a mailbag. It's called In the Mentions.
You're talking to me? Well, who the hell else are you talking to? Talking to me? Well, I'm the only one here.
All right. Did you see the tweet that was circulating, Dennis Cox, that was a home plate umpire, Doug Ennings, earlier in the week, who got 29 ball strike calls wrong? Did you see it?
29?
29 ball strike calls wrong. It was the worst performance by a home plate umpire.
Gross.
In the major leagues this year. And I was watching this, and you might not remember the name Eric Gregg. But Eric Gregg had probably the worst home plate umpiring performance in the history of organized sports. Mm-hmm. Like, there are Little League umpires who did a better job than Eric Gregg did in a World Series game where Leon Hernandez for the Florida Marlins, might not have been a World Series game, might have been a league championship series game. Anyway, he wasn't even throwing the ball close to home plate, and Eric Gregg kept calling it a strike. I mean, pitches were like 8 inches outside, and he was calling it a strike. It was so bad. Anyway, Doug Ennings had the worst performance of the year, statistically, with 29 missed calls.
I wonder what the average is.
Much better than that.
Yeah, I would say.
So Al said, I think I know the answer, but are there any consequences for umps when they screw up this bad? Now, it was mind-bogglingly bad, to the point where the team that got hosed was the Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. The next game, their hitting coach brought the lineup card out and was ejected before the game started.
Yeah, I got tossed. I did see that.
Because he went to Doug Ennings and said, by the way, yesterday, you sucked. And they had no sense of humor and no, like, just let the guy vent. Because you did. Anyway, the answer is, well, there are supposed to be. Uh-huh. I've always said this about Major League Baseball. It is horrendous how they choose postseason assignments. Mm-hmm. You want to give the bad umpires who have been around a long time some like a freebie? Give them the All-Star game. Who gives a damn about the All-Star game?
Yeah.
But you can't let those guys work playoff games. The fact that Angel Hernandez or Laz Diaz get postseason assignments, or Doug Ennings based on this, mm-hmm. although I don't know Ennings to be a terrible umpire, I just know that this was bad. But I know Angel Hernandez is the worst umpire in baseball, and there's no second place. But he gets postseason assignments. How? That's where you should, I mean, basically, put forth your however many umpires you need, your highest rated umpires. Longevity means nothing. Nothing. We want the best umpires. Yeah. End of story.
Simple as that.
But Major League Baseball doesn't do it that way, and that is that's atrocious. All right, let's move on. This is Chris responding to the fact that North Carolina has not and will not, by the way, that is a dead issue now, will not put forth a sports wagering bill. Could they be called back into session? I guess. Could Tim Moore, the Speaker of the House, keep them in session? I guess. Don't bet on it. Sorry about the pun. Anyway, Chris says, I don't know why I expected politicians to do the right thing for once. Bible passages being quoted, that's true. 1950s point shaving scandal brought up when athletes can now cash in on their NIL. These people are so out of touch with the times. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
For the people who voted no, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you're doing. This is not a morality play anymore. I mean, cigarettes are legal.
Yeah.
You can buy cigarettes. We know what that does. What are we doing?
Remember that time they tried to ban alcohol?
Yeah, well.
Yeah, what happened?
Look.
NASCAR. Well, it gave us NASCAR, actually.
when Prohibition was enacted, people still drank, right?
Yeah.
The state received nothing from it. People are still gambling. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, Tim. Mike, this is in reaction to my tweet after Rory McIlroy made about a 30-foot putt for a double bogey in the second round of the U.S. Open. I basically said if there was ever a great double bogey, that was it. Tim responded, I made a 15 on the par 3 sixth hole at Pinehurst number 2 by rolling in a 14-footer.
Nice.
Next time I played that hole, I made a 2. Takes special golf talent to have the opportunity to improve 13 strokes on one hole. I also have made a long putt for a 15. Seriously.
I bet.
I made a 25-footer downhill for a 15 on the first hole of a golf tournament. It was pretty good. I did not win.
This is the Adam Gold Show.